I just want to invite you today. This is to, in a sense, gather around the table. I know I've only got a small table, so we're sort of having me sit on one side and you sit on the other. It doesn't quite work like a real one. But we were learning last week that when it comes to being around a table, that no one's a stranger around the table. That when you invite somebody to come and to sit with you and to meal with you around the table, that people are welcome. There's a sense in which when we meal together, there's acceptance. But there's something that we want to talk about today that happens around the table, or maybe sometimes doesn't happen. And that's that as we come to the table to be no longer strangers around the table, and as we would eat and drink together, it doesn't really work unless somebody serves. You could sort of get a table and come and gather around a table and you could even maybe have some conversation around the table, but it really won't be the table unless somebody's done some cooking. And if somebody's prepared the table and laid out the table and maybe even you're standing outside the door of somebody's house waiting for them to let you in, but if no one's going to open the door and serve you by saying, welcome, come on into the house, well, maybe you never even get to the table to start with. It seems the obvious, but in fact, if we're to be around the table, somebody has to serve. Because otherwise, that meal won't happen. And everybody will go away hungry and grumpy. But there's another side to it. It's not that, so some serve and some eat around this table, because that's not fair. Like what if that was our world, that whenever we gather around the table, there's some who serve and some who consume? Like, that's not cool. That's not cool at my house. I get so annoyed with my boys when they don't do their end of serving, which is normally at the other end of the table time, you know? Around the table, all are served when all serve. Like we're meant to be a family here, the church family, and we're trying to learn about what it means to love each other as Christ loved us. And we're inviting each other to be around the table, and I want to tell you that around the table, all are served when all served. If someone's not doing their job, then someone else is missing out. Paul wrote these words in Galatians 5. Listen to them. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. That's cool. You are free. You don't have to cook. You don't have to do the dishes. You don't have to set the table. You don't have to welcome someone in at the door. You are free to do as you please. You are free, okay? You're free. You don't have to choose lunch for next week. In fact, you are free that if you're one of the hosts of lunch and all these people rock up to your place, you are free not to cook them lunch and for them just to go hungry. You are free. There are no rules. Listen to what Paul says, though. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. For the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command: love your neighbor as yourself. There is one rule. It's the rule, it's the law of love. You don't have to keep the law anymore. You just have to love. You're not free to not love. I loved you so that you might know my love, so that you might love me, so that you might love each other. And loving looks pretty good when it puts a towel on and it serves. And we're going to learn about that story today. But before we do, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. Her name is Gilma. And Gilma comes from Colombia, and she's been living in New Zealand for about 2 years. And she has an incredible heart of love for God and for people. And she shows her love around here in ways that you might not know by serving. And I just have invited her to share her story. Don't know if Gilma's arrived yet. She is here. No. Gilma doesn't like being up here, and that's why we don't see what she does. But I love what you share at the end there. That and you are very qualified to tell us that we need to join together and serve each other. Thank you. Gracias. Ultimately, we can't all be like Gilma, okay? Because she's unique. But in a weird kind of way, we can all be like Jesus, who's even more unique. But we can be because he said so. He says these words, "A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this everyone will know you are my disciples, if you love one another." People will know that you're my followers because you look like me. How did Jesus love his disciples? We looked briefly last week at this title Jesus gives himself called the Son of Man, the one who has come from God with the authority of God. And there's those three occasions, there's more, but there's three occasions where he talks about what that looks like, what the Son of Man does, why he came, what he did here, how he came seeking and saving, eating and drinking. But he also came to serve. How did Jesus do this seeking and saving? Mark 10:45 says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." The Son of Man came serving and sacrificing. Not coming to serve, but to be served. And he did not come to take, but to give. And giving for Jesus meant holding nothing back. In God's family, in the kingdom of Jesus, serving is so important. So much so that Jesus says that the greatest people in his kingdom are the servants. Serving and sacrifice in the way of Jesus is love at its very best. So if you've got your Bible, just go there or on your app to John 13. And we're going to look at this amazing chapter where Jesus holds nothing back as he is a servant and as he shows love. Love at its best. John 13 verse 1. "It was just before the Passover festival, and Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father." This was a time of celebration for Israel. It was a time when they reflected back on some significant events in their history as they were set free from Egypt. But when he says Jesus knew the hour had come, it's interesting that though they're in this annual celebration that's central to Israel, this hour that's coming is about to be central to all human history. And then the end of verse 1, "Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end." In all the story that we're going to then go and read, we need to understand it in this context, that something significant and central to all humanity is about to happen, and that at the heart of it is Jesus' love for us, love for his disciples. "The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God." It's interesting that the meal was in progress. A couple of the disciples had come earlier, and there's these cool little things that happened about seeing this donkey and finding this room upstairs, and then they'd prepared the table. Not a table like this, probably a low-lying table or a mat on the ground, and it wasn't prepared like our food here. It was prepared with this great feast of lamb and of unleavened bread and of herbs, and it was prepared for their Passover banquet. And so now the meal is in progress. They're actually starting the meal. And yet what's interesting is that we're going to find out that not everything is in progress. Some things haven't even happened yet. Some people haven't served yet. So though they're having a meal around the table, not all are served because not all are serving. But there's somebody that's in progress. Judas is at the table and he's in progress. The devil's already prompted him. Some stuff's already going on. He's progressing, but it's not good progress. And also around the table, there's 11 others who aren't in progress because they're not serving as they should. Because not one of them has progressed in the fish washing department. And it's not all good. It stinks around the table. But there's one who's not only good around this table, but he's God and he's in progress. And that's Jesus. He knows that the time has come where the Father has put all things under him. He has the authority, for he is God in the room. He is good and he has all authority, and he is about to depart and go to be with his Father. But he knows between here and there is the cross. He knows what he's doing, where he's going, and why. Look at verse 4. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. You see, though the meal's in progress, it's not a comfortable place to be because the guys have taken their shoes off and they've left those like at the door, probably their sandals that they've been in all day, and it's been pretty dirty. And they've come in and they're not like sitting up here, they're more like down reclining around, and the way you would recline is you would lean on one arm and eat with the other. And the next guy would do the same and the same. But what that means is that your feet were around, you know, not in front of the guy, but around here, and you could smell them, right? Like, and it wasn't cool to be in this home anyway with dirty feet. So what should have happened is as the disciples prepared this room upstairs and got all the food ready and did all that serving, then somebody should have taken a towel on and had a bowl of water, and as each person arrived upstairs, they should have washed their feet to prepare them for the meal. But nobody had washed anybody's feet. You got to wonder why. Like because surely it's somebody's job. Maybe somebody's thinking, whose job was it to get somebody to wash the feet? But that's not the point. There's 12 of them that could have easily done the job. And in this case, nobody's serving, so nobody's served. And it stinks. Do you know how bad it can stink? Like, on Friday night, I was in Christchurch, and I arrived at a youth hostel there beside the museum. And I was in a room sharing with five other guys in a room. I was double all their age. You could probably add all their ages to get in and be close. No, not quite. But all these young guys in this room. So I got some of my gear sorted out, and then I went out and had dinner, and then I came back, and it was getting late, and I came up into my room, and these five guys were all in the bunks, and so I had a top bunk, and they hadn't left the old guy a low one, so they had to climb up on there. But before I did, when I came into the room, I took my shoes and socks off. Whew! I stunk the room out. I did. And I don't normally have that bad of feet, but what happened is I've been away for about 4 days, and I miscalculated on the socks. And I'd done this run on the Friday, and then when I'd got back from it and had a shower and was going through my gear, I didn't have a pair of clean socks. And I had to put yesterday's socks on. And it was pretty hot down in Canterbury this week. And the other thing was that I didn't know whether to take my dry trail shoes or my wet trail shoes, because there is a difference between how knobbly they are, you know? It's like on your bikes, you know, you have the different things for the road and the off-road. So I didn't know which ones to run. So I took two sets of running shoes. Well, all my running shoes stink. So I put my stay-old socks into my spare pair of running shoes Went out, you know, for the afternoon and then the evening, and then at the end of the evening, come into my room in the hostel with my five new buddies, and I take my shoes and socks off, and I'm just like quite embarrassed. It stinks. So here's these guys in the room. There's 13 of them, 12 plus Jesus, and they've all got dirty feet. What's going to happen? Well, I think we've got an interesting picture of what serving looks like. The first thing is that Jesus got up. The meal's already in progress. He got up. If you want to serve, you've got to get active. You don't serve just sitting around waiting. You have to make a move. And if there's a need, somebody has to move. And Jesus gets up. He's there and they're eating and they're talking and they're starting into the festivities and it smells and he's going, this is not right. No one here is honored. And he gets up. Not only that, he took off his outer clothing. So he took, just teasing. I thought about it and then I thought that could be disturbing. So he did. He wasn't embarrassed and he didn't care if he disturbed. He took his outer garment off. He took it off. What I thought about that was that when you serve, something has to go. You can't just get up and serve and continue everything else. Something has to stop. Something has to change. Jesus had to take something off in order to serve. Sometimes you see a need and you think, but I'd have to stop doing this to do that. And you have to make a choice. It's not only active, but it means that you've got to stop doing something else. And then he wrapped a towel around his waist. He takes a towel. He's stripped down. He's got a towel on. Think about Jesus. It's hard to picture it, isn't it? Like God, he's taken his shirt off and he's wrapped in a towel. It's hard to picture, isn't it? Really? I mean, we're not sort of back in the regal days, but you think he's the king, he should have a robe on, or at least a nice suit or something, and it's a banquet, and he's the one in the room, and everyone else has probably got their nicest gears on because it's Passover, and that's what you do. And Jesus hasn't. He's in his undies and a towel, bare-chested, in the room. How humble is Jesus? How humble. You know what? To serve sometimes takes humility. Most times takes humility. It means getting up. It means putting it off. It means wrapping up. Oh, and then he takes the water and he pours it out. Sorry about the noise. You know what? As he pours the water out, I was thinking about that. That Jesus pours out. Jesus is pouring out way more than water, isn't he? Yeah, so sometimes, you know, somebody gives you a gift, maybe of service. And gifts are free, right? And what Jesus is about to do for his disciples, it's free. But whenever something's free, did you know that it always costs? There is nothing in life that's free. Everything costs somebody. Jesus pours himself out. It costs Jesus to do what he's doing right now. And then what does he do? He washes feet. Richard, yours will do. You're right here on the end. Here, bro, just whip those shoes off. It's all right. When when Jesus washes feet, he's washing feet because they need washing. They're dirty, right? Sorry, it's cold. Didn't have time to warm it up. And I don't know if he had soap, but we're going to give them a good going over. Now, the thing with Jesus is as he washed their feet, what happened to his hands? What happened to his hands? They got dirty because he washed their feet. And then it's this weird thing. I've got this other towel here because it's way more easier and not so awkward, but it says that he dried them with the towel he was wearing. I know that just might have been how you did it back in those days, but I find that interesting. That as he cleans them and he's drying them with this towel that he's girded himself with, in this humility that he's taken on, that he's wrapped himself in. What's he doing for his disciples today? He's not just washing their feet. He's honoring them. He's just going, "You're important to me. You matter. I want you to be clean. I want you to be comfortable. I want you to know that you're welcome here. Can't have one dirty foot." It didn't really matter like whose feet were dirtiest or whether they smelled or not. That's not the point. It's that Jesus knew that they needed washing, but he knew more than that. He knew that they needed to be loved. What did it say at verse 1? Jesus, knowing all that's going to happen, he loved them to the end. There you go, Richard. You're welcome. Jesus washes every one of their feet. He comes to Peter. Remember, there's that interchange where Peter goes, "Not my feet, no way." And Jesus goes, "Yeah, you too." And he washes Peter's feet. Listen to these words of Jesus. When he'd finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked them. You might be thinking, yeah, they're thinking like, "Yeah, you washed our feet. It's better now. We're ready for the meal now." This is what he said. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should wash one another's feet." He's not talking about right then. He's not saying, "Look, see, I just washed your feet. Now everyone's to take turns. Everyone's to have a turn. We're going to have a foot washing ceremony. I've washed everyone's feet. Now it's Thomas, your turn. I did you first. You go around and do everyone else." That's not what he's saying. He's saying, "See what we just did there? See how that nobody was serving? No one was loving? Everybody was dirty? See how it just took one to humble themselves and to show love and to serve and get dirty doing it? And everybody served and loved and clean. That's how I want you guys to live." It doesn't need much more explaining than that, does it? You see your brother and sister in need, and you serve the need. That's what Gilmar was telling us, wasn't she? See the need, and I just go and meet the need. Even if the need is dirty feet. But there's more to the story than washing of feet. The next part of the story is really hard to swallow. You'll see why soon. Remember the intro to the story? There's Jesus, who's from the Father, and he's returning to the Father, and that's the devil has already prompted Judas to betray Jesus, and the Father has given Jesus all the authority, And now we're going to see what loving to the end looks like, what serving really looks like. John 13:21 says these words. After he'd said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, "Very truly I tell you, one of you is going to betray me." His disciples stared at each other, at a loss to know which of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's John who wrote this book, one of them, the disciple who Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. Simon Peter motioned to this disciple and says, "Hey, ask him which one he means." Leaning back against Jesus, John asks him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is the one to whom I give this piece of bread when I've dipped it in the dish." Then dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. As soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. This part of the story is so hard to understand. As Jesus is showing the extent of his love. We were learning last week about how that bread in this culture of Jesus, and even today in many Oriental and Middle Eastern cultures, bread is like the spoon, it's like the knife and fork, it's like the bowl. Though we eat it, it's really our tool for eating the main event, you know? And so when we think of bread, we think of the whole meal. And at this meal, there were different dishes that would have been in the central table, and they were symbolic dishes because of it being Passover. But almost that doesn't matter so much right now. It's more about the relationship that's going on, because suddenly here's Jesus and he's reclining and John is beside him. John is leaning against him. And based on what happens next, when Jesus extends his hand to Judas, it's quite possible that Judas is on the other side of Jesus. Quite possible. Certainly within reach. The closer you got to sit to the main man, to the master, the more honored you were. John is in an honored place. Everyone is honored around the table because they're all mealing with Jesus, but John is close, but possibly Judas is close too. And there was this thing that they would do as they used the bread as their knife and their fork, and you know, they might take a piece and they would dip it in whatever was central, which was sort of the main food, and they would use it like a spoon. Man, that garlic hummus is good. And they're enjoying their meal, thus cheering with each other. Did you ever think about the fact that while this meal was in progress and everyone's feet were dirty, and that Jesus got up and took his robe off and put a towel on and poured water and washed feet, that he washed Judas's feet? Already knowing Jesus with all the authority from the Father, already knowing that Satan had put these things into Judas's heart, already knowing that he washes Judas's feet. And then now they sit at the table, around the table, and it tells us that when John says, "Who is it?" he goes, "The one that I dip the bread for and give it to." What is that about? So Jesus does this. He takes the bread and he dips it. They called this the sop, S-O-P, the sop. It was almost as if, and some would say that when they were coming towards the end of the bread, it was like the crusty, crunchy bit was the favorite kind of bit, you know? Some of you throw that bit out, some of you want that bit, you know? But this was like a precious piece, this piece of bread that he would take. And as Jesus would dip that in, you know, everyone's dipping in and they're eating, you know, hopefully not too much double dipping going. And then as Jesus takes this one, maybe the last one, maybe the special piece, people are wondering, who's Jesus going to give that to? They've suddenly forgotten the little conversation that John's had with them because they just want to know, will he give it to me? Because everybody wants Jesus to give him that. Because in their culture, for the master, for the host, to extend the sop to you was greatest honor, was greatest love. And they tell us that you didn't just go and like hand it over going, oh, here you go. I don't know who to pick, so I don't want anyone to feel like Judas. But do you know what he would have done? He would have reached over from where he lay to Judas, and he placed that in Judas's mouth. The sop. Judas, I love you. I love you. And Judas eats the sop. See the extent of Jesus' love? Man, these pig-headed disciples, yeah, he washes their feet, but this one who will betray him, he washes his feet and he gives him the sop. Verse 31, when he, Judas, had gone, Judas goes out, he leaves. It's like it's the time for him to go, but it's almost like, man, you're not going to stay, are you? There's too much messing around inside Judas. He leaves. Then Jesus said these words, now the Son of Man is glorified and God is glorified in him. He's speaking about it's time. It's time for the cross. It's time for the sacrifice. It's time I've given you all. I've washed your feet. I've fed you, I've spoken to you, and now it's time for me to go and give my life. And it's now that he says the words that we're focused on for this month. Verse 34, a new command I give you. Love one another as I've loved you. So you must love one another. By this all men will know you're my disciples if you love one another. Do you get that? This is Jesus. He's the king, and he humbles himself, leaving us an example. He shows the full of extent of his love by washing dirty feet gently, softly, graciously, mercifully, lovingly. And then he even feeds his enemy and ultimately serves by giving his life as a ransom for many. This is my Savior, my Master, my Lord, my God, my lover, my friend. Jesus is my servant. You thought about that? He's your servant. And he's not ashamed of it. And he goes on to say that we should do as he's done for us, love each other, so that the world will look and say, hey, you look a lot like Jesus because you love like Jesus. Imagine yourself, you're in the room with Jesus and the disciples. I know for some of us, you go, man, I wish I'd been there. If he'd washed my feet, man, it would have changed my life forever. If I'd had that touch and been so humbled by his humility, oh, as embarrassing as it would have been, it would change my life. But it's like we were in the room. Think about this next verse that we've already looked at. Just been going with that next verse there, thanks. So he got up. Where was Jesus before all this happened? With the Father, eternity past, making sure everything in the whole universe kept ticking over just right. Full glory. Jesus got up. And he took off that glory, and he wrapped himself up in humanity, skin and bones, and all the other stuff that sticks to that. And then he poured out his grace, his mercy, his healing and power, his acceptance of others, his wisdom And ultimately, he poured out his blood into the bowl of the cross that would cleanse us. And he got down and he got dirty as he washed us. For it says that he bore our sin. He wore our dirt, our brokenness in himself on the cross. Paul says it this way in this poem, and he's relating it directly to how you and I should love each other. Verse 5, it says this in Philippians 2. In your relationship with one another, now this is really pointed here. This is saying to you and I here today, in our relationship with each other here, in our relationships with each other, have the same mindset as Jesus. What was his mindset like? Here it is. Who, being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. You see, it's like we were in the room, and he's done all that for us. And it's more than that. Today, no matter what you have done, what failures, dishonor, or disgrace, Jesus today extends his full love to you. Still. He offers you a seat right close to him around his table, and he reaches out for you with that piece of bread that he's dipped. And he leans across, and he wants to place that in your mouth. And as he does so, it's like he's whispering, I love you. You're always welcome here. You belong here at the table with me. Please stay. I'm so glad I found you and brought you home. And we could finish right there, because it's like it's enough, isn't it? That to be so greatly loved by Jesus. But he doesn't finish it there. It's a beautiful moment, you know, Jesus and us. When we can picture that his love for us is so great that though we would go, don't wash my feet, I'm so embarrassed. He would go, no, I'll wash your feet. Though we might all tense up and go, okay then. He'll go, it's okay, and he would just relax us in and wash us. Though we'd have our head down and not want to give him eye contact, he would offer us the bread. Though we feel disgraced and not worthy, he would say, no, you are, you belong. But he doesn't finish it there. He catches our eye at the table. He looks at us and he catches our eye, and it's like he would get us to follow his gaze around the table. And he would want us to see everyone that he sees around the table. And we'd follow his gaze around the table and we'd see a table crowded with men and with women, with boys, with girls, with rich, with poor, honored, dishonored, popular and not, black and white, some in celebration, some mourning, some with arms tightly folded and others struggling to sit still because they just want to get up and dance. Such great diversity around the table. And he would turn to you and he would turn to me and he would say, see these ones? I love them too. Please love them in the same way I've loved you. Do as I have just done for you. Serve them. Wash their feet. Place the sop in their mouths and whisper to them in your actions, I love you. That's what serving is. And when all serve, all are served. And Jesus' love is made known. Let's just pray. It's like, Jesus, you want us to get to that space where we would love others with your love, but we keep having to come back and be reminded it's because you love us. You love us. you would come and you would do the humble thing for us. You would wash us and cleanse us. You would give your life for us. You would extend your blessings to us. You would take from your rich provision and place it in our mouths and whisper, I love you. You are welcome here. You belong at this table. I'm so glad I found you and brought you home. But Lord Jesus, you don't want us to just then hold it all in. You want us to look around the table and to love each one as you've loved us. Just, we're just asking, Lord, that you transform us, because there's some people we don't want to love, we don't want to serve. They might even feel like a Judas, we don't want to put something in their mouth. But you do, because there's no boundaries to your love. You show the full extent of your love. Would you move us to be a family here who love one another deeply from the heart? No more gaps. Having received your love so that it overflows, that we cannot contain it. So that no one would be a stranger around here. And that all would be served as we all serve. We pray this in your precious name, Jesus.